He will join us again at 11:20. We'll talk to him. He's from the Browns Radio Network. But Manny had a busy weekend last week, called that Ohio State-Michigan State game. And then, boom, turned right around and called the Browns game. So got to give him something better to talk about, though. That's the thing. So we'll talk to him coming up in a little bit. Plus Sal Palantoni. I'm looking forward to that at 12:20. We've been talking about a number of things. Davante Adams, you know, wanting out in Las Vegas. Amari Cooper, and I guess I could just ask the basic question, would you trade him and when? I think the when part of it is super important when you look at what the Browns are doing right now, because if you do trade him, does that mean you're throwing up the white flag on the season? 216-474-0092, 216-474-0092. And then we also, Jeff, I just want to touch on this real quick, talking about the last caller who was talking about the injuries, and it just feels like the Browns are the team that have the most injuries in the league. But that's just...
Who's our buddy Roman in Canton?
Yeah, and so... but it just, if you look at the list, and I, you know, again, they'll put anyone on the list that might even have a paper cut.
Those hurt.
But they're nasty sometimes.
Absolutely. You don't want to get them infected.
I'm just like, Tampa Bay last week had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. They had like 15 guys that were questionable going into last week's game. Now, how many are out?
Why? Bad strength and training staffs.
Oh, that's what it is. Always blame strength and conditioning. Ray is in Chardon. Hi, Ray. How are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hello, good, Ray. Good.
What do you got?
No, I hate saying it because I was a Jack Conklin fan before he came here. Mm-hmm. But at this point, I feel like he has just taken up a roster spot. Like, when was the last time? How many games in a Browns uniform has he actually played for us? I feel like he's been injured for 3 years now. They keep saying Jack Conklin's a starting right tackle. I haven't seen him on the field since he showed up here. How many games has he played?
He's played 94 in his career for the Browns. What do we got? He started in 2022. He started 14 of 14 games, and then when he had to see in 19, so he missed 21. He's 16-16. So when he plays. So
he's had some major injuries.
37. He's played 37 games for the Browns in 4 years.
4 years.
Yeah. Huh.
I'm mistaken. Okay. Have a good day, guys.
No worries. Thanks, Ray.
Guys have these major things. Nick Chubb can't play last year.
Is anybody mad?
Nick got hurt. He was seriously hurt. Jack Conklin, we saw the knee injury last year, did we not?
Yes.
You're not going to get back on a football field with that. Does that mean that, my hip hurts, I can't play this week? Nope, that's not what that means. That means his knee was destroyed. You don't play football with destroyed knees. So can we quit questioning these guys' toughness? I mean, Nick Chubb's tough. Nobody's questioning Nick. Well, why question Jack? He had the same kind of an injury. His knee was destroyed.
I can't argue with anything you just said. 216-474-0092. 216-474-0092. Let me go back to that original question. I think it's pretty simple. Would you trade Amari Cooper? My answer is no. Now, if you get close to the trade deadline and you're stuck on one win and he's sitting here without a contract for next year, maybe you do everybody a favor, including him, and give him a chance to go play on a team that might be able to make the playoffs at that point.
My answer is absolutely I would trade Amari Cooper. Only if you get to the trade deadline and you have like 2 wins or 3 wins. If you're 4-5, I'm not trading him. 4-5, you can get in the playoffs. Run off some wins in a row, you can make the playoffs. If you're 2-7, by all means, I'm trading him at the trade deadline. Why? Because it's not about Amari. It's about build your team for next year. And if you could trade him to a team that could use him and give you even a fifth-round pick.
Again, I think it depends. Like, do you think if they traded him now at 1-3, what is his value? If you trade him at the trade deadline, I can't remember how many games we said that was, but
9.
9. So if you're 1-8, what is his trade value? Unless you get two teams that are both bidding on him.
His trade value is going to be like a fifth round pick.
No matter what? No matter if it's now or then?
Now it's probably a little bit more.
I would think so,
well,
too.
I'm not trading him. You're 1-3. Teams can make the playoffs at 1-3. We know the numbers aren't good. We mentioned those yesterday. I think it's, what, 5% of teams that have been 1-3 make the playoffs under different schedule formats, certainly. But, look, if your confidence in the Browns is absolutely shot after four games because they're 1-3 with an offensive line that's in shreds, well, then you weren't very confident in them in the first place. And I think they can bounce back if they get better offensive line play and if their defense can tackle the running game. We got to remember, that's not worked very well either. You know, just kept the tackle better on defense. Clearly some issues going on here. But if you happen to go on the road and win this week in Washington and the following week in Philadelphia and the Eagles don't look like world beaters, you're 3-3. Okay? That happens. Everything, it's a different world. You go on the road the next 2 weeks and you lose twice and you're 1-5. Well, we'll see changes and we'll see them fast. I think we'll see trades. I think it would be stunning, but we could even see bigger shakeups than that. You know what I mean by that?
Oh, absolutely. I know what you're saying. There is one thing that gives me hope and a little bit of faith, and that goes back to the fact that Deshaun Watson's been here before. Now, he didn't have the same injury before, but I don't know why, but I keep going back and looking at that 2018 team from Houston that started off the season 0-3. And that they came back and ended up making the playoffs. That team easily could have been 0-5 to start the season. They lost three in a row and then won their next two games in overtime to get back, to crawl back up to 2-3. So there's a little bit of history there, and it does give me a little bit of confidence that Deshaun knows how to, I don't know, steer the boat through a real bad storm. Because he's seen that. He's been here before. He's done that. And you know, I wish he would have played more games along the way? Yeah, I do. But, and he also did have, you know, hit some pretty good guys on that team. You know, there's a point to that 2018 Houston Texans season that gives me a little bit of confidence that maybe he can get things rolling. Because he's been here, he's done this, and maybe he knows when not to panic. I mean, that team rattled off 1, 2, 3. Man, I feel like I'm doing a lot of counting today. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They rattled off 10 wins in a row after starting the season 0-3.
That's swell.
Is that right? 10 wins? What'd they end up with that season? That 9 wins in a row. They were 11-5 with Bill O'Brien that year. And so, I think your history sometimes says some things.
You see a team every year in the NFL, Andy, that has a lousy start, puts it together, and ends up making the playoffs. It seems to happen every year. Now, 1-3, that's, you know, who knows. But, you know, teams at 2-4, whatever, get it together and just put it together. We'll see if the Browns can be that kind of a team because, obviously, they've had a lousy start. Let's not sugarcoat that. Mm-hmm. Even with the injuries, it's a lousy start. You know, I think they should have won the Raider game. They should have won the Giant game.
Yes.
I think they should be 3-1 right now. Cowboys, I get it. You didn't play very well. And the Cowboys, though they haven't looked like world beaters since, did that day. They played really well. I think the team should be 3-1. The fact that they're not, well, that's an issue. That's a problem. And that's on the coaches. It's on the player. It's on everybody there. They were lousy the last 2 weeks. Against teams that I thought they should have beat, but they didn't. So now they've got to figure it out.
I hate to look ahead, but do you think the easier part of the schedule is going to be the AFC North games?
Nope. Absolutely not. I mean, Andy, the two most winnable games on their schedule, three, I think, at least if you're looking for a stretch where it's like, okay, that looks good, that looks good, that looks good. It's the last 3 weeks, and they went 1-2. You know, as it's turned out, Jacksonville's not doing very well. The Giants, eh. The Raiders are 2-2, but still. I mean, didn't you think they should have beaten the Raiders?
Yes.
With the worst run offense in the NFL?
Yes.
And they gained over 150 yards against the Browns?
It's hard to look at them and look at the Giants are 1-3, and now we know where they're 1. I hate looking at that. And now you got the Commanders, who are 3-1. That's who you're playing this
and
week. It's still weird.
And Jaden Daniels is lighting it up.
And he looks fantastic. We haven't really talked about this, and I'll just touch on it for 1 second here, too, that you look at the AFC North, and it still doesn't look like are the Steelers really a 3-1 team right now? Are they really the best team?
I think the division is sitting there waiting to be won by somebody. Right now, I think that somebody's Baltimore.
At 2-2.
Yeah.
And the Bengals picked up their first win. So I look at this and I'm like, the AFC North also gives me hope. I'm looking at trying to give myself hope, and I was so frustrated on Sunday, I didn't think I'd be able to see any of that by now. And I'm not trying to sugarcoat it. I'm just trying to figure out paths and patterns and things that the Browns, you know, can give you a little bit of reason to believe. And knowing that it's a long season, you know, that all comes into effect too. So it's all sitting there. Waiting for you. I still, you know, you think it's Ravens still?
Yeah.
Pittsburgh's defense, though, still gives me a lot of reason.
And their offense gives me reason to think they're coming back to the pack. I think Russell Wilson will be the starter there eventually here still. And I know Justin Fields has played well.
I don't know. And then you look at the Bengals' defense has given up 104 points in 4 games. No one's even close in the North. Not even close. Steelers have only given up 53. The Ravens have given up 88. Even the Browns have only given up 87 points. It's that fact that they've only scored 66. That looks so ugly. I'm looking at the Patriots have only scored 52, and the Dolphins have scored 45. And we all know what shape they're in as far as their quarterback's concerned. So, I don't know. All those things sitting there, you know who we can ask more questions to? Andrew Siciliano from the Browns Radio Network. He'll join us next. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. A traveling man and a very hardworking man. He is Andrew Siciliano, and he is on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. What's up, traveling man? How are you doing?
Hello, sir. Good morning, guys. I would like to, whenever you say traveling man, I'm going to just say lucky man.
You are lucky.
Just a lucky guy who gets to do this. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good morning, guys. How are you?
Although you sounded great on both games that I listened to last week. So I say that to you not only to be nice, but I thought you, I mean, especially the Sunday game was a tough one. But the Saturday one was a lot of fun. And you got to see two of the best catches, I think, of the whole weekend in college football.
Yeah, back-to-back as well. I mean, a couple seconds apart. Let me tell you guys, the amount of respect and praise for an 18-year-old through the roof. And look, there's always the coach speak on the podium, right? Which is, oh, the guy's working hard and, you know, he's going to have a bright future and we're really excited to have him. You know, there's that kind of stuff. And then there is the behind the scenes stuff when you're actually talking to coaches and it's legit the praise and respect that they have for Jeremiah Smith and the fact that he practices like a 10-year veteran and the fact that, you know, they think legitimately he could play in the NFL tomorrow if he had to. He is that good and that ready, and he's a kid who's asking to be on punt block team. You know, he might have $1 million allegedly NIL deal. His Twitter handle might say professional football player, but he practices like a pro. He does not act like a spoiled kid, and everybody's raving about him for good reason.
Oh, he's awesome to watch. Awesome to watch.
Can we put him in an orange helmet for Sunday?
You know, I got a couple of tweets during the game. Can you please bring him with you to Vegas?
How'd that work?
Hey, I'm happy I got there. That was a long one, and that gave me a little anxiety, and so I'm happy we got there. And heck, got there in like 4 hours before the game. It was fantastic.
So riddle me this one, my friend. Amari Cooper has had an up-and-down start to the season. He's the least of my concerns. Is that fair? That he's the least of my concerns?
I think it is.
Okay.
I think his track record proves that these are bumps in the road and that he will be fine. It was disappointing last week. I mean, that was one of Deshaun's better throws of the season, you know, to hit a downfield shot and have it go right through his hands. And then the Raiders, 6 plays later, put points on the board. That was a massive, massive swing. But I also saw the Amari Cooper that ran away from people on that 82-yard touchdown that probably should have stood, and Deshaun make a great throw on that. So it's not as if, look, he bounced back in the same game is my point. But, yeah, that one hurt because when the margin of error is as slim as it is right now, you need plays like that, especially in the fourth quarter, because the fourth quarter has been their nemesis.
So how do they do it? How do they put four quarters together? Because I think that's what we're all waiting for.
Yeah, look, that's the big question here. And if you could somehow bottle that first drive magic, they've scored on all five opening drives, then I think they'd be in a better – well, I know they'd be in a better position. You can't leave it to the fourth quarter. This team is better than the teams you've played the last 2 weeks. As odd as that sounds, I know it didn't feel that way when you looked at the calendar, it looked at the schedule midsummer. This team is better than the other two teams you have faced.
Agreed.
And you're going into a building that is going to be loud. They have that franchise, that fan base is awake again. It had been dormant for a long, long time. It is awake. People are fighting over tickets like they haven't done in 25 years there. This is a different beast this week, and Jaden Daniels is truly the real deal. But the thing that gets me, if you ask, well, how do you win this week? You got to stop the run, and you couldn't stop the run last week against the worst run team in the NFL. This Washington team, don't be fooled by the shiny object that is Jaden Daniels. They're a run first team, and he is part of that. Collectively, Jaden Daniels, Brian Robinson, and Austin Eckler, assuming he's back this week, have already run for 600 yards. They ran for 219 as a team last week. So you got to stop the run this week.
Speaking of that, stun the heck out of you that the Raiders ran for 152 yards against the Browns?
Yes, considering they came in with 151 combined for the previous three, I would say yes.
So what's the problem?
I mean, tackling was the problem with that one. You got one guy out of a gap, and then you got to have Ronnie Hickman, you know, try to save a touchdown. There are a lot of – the thing for me this week is tackling on the edge, tackling on the perimeter, because the Commanders aren't just a run team. They're a screen team. I believe – and this number blew me away when I saw it last night. I believe 76% of their first down play calls are screens or runs. 76%. So they're going to test you on the edge, and you got to tackle in space. You got to come up, and you got to wrap up. If you get that guy into the line of scrimmage, you got to bring him down, period. Look, easy for me to say, but they have guys, the Browns, we have guys that clearly have shown an ability to tackle on the perimeter and hit hard. You got safeties that can, you know, shoot the gap and get him in the backfield. You just got to bring him down, because this is what they do. They run the ball, and then they take a couple of shots downfield.
All right, riddle me this one, Batman. How can the Browns look so good on the first drive and then not be able to put the offense together again for the rest of the game?
Look, they're not the first team to have that dilemma. It's actually a lot more common than you think. You work all week on, I don't want to call it your script, but, you know, your opening drive. You work all week on your first quarter, your opening drive, your first 10, your first 15. You drill them down, you execute them perfectly, and then you got to get to everything else, and then teams make adjustments. Look, I mean, this has a very simplistic, you know, your dad on the couch analysis, why don't they adjust? But they've got to find a way to put drives together in the second, the third, and the fourth quarters. And if that's more of dedication to the run, I don't know what it is, to be quite frank, but Deshaun opened 9 for 9, and he looked pretty good. And that's not to suggest he didn't throw good balls in the fourth quarter. He did. But they had the death by 1,000 paper cuts of a couple of little things, including the Nick Harris hold, which upon further review, I don't think it met the standard of an egregious hold. I think Miles has been held like that 4 to 5 times a game, if not more, and it not be called almost every week. I would have liked to have seen that one picked up, but yet still they had chances at the end.
Deshaun, I thought, played fairly well. Certainly played well enough to win against the Raiders. What growth have you seen?
That's a great question. I think he's taken some more shots downfield confidently. Obviously, there's the one in which he couldn't connect with Amari, in which he got mad at DeJuan afterwards. There was the second play of the game where he scrambled to the right and Jerry Jeudy made a great toe-tip catch on the sideline in front of the Browns bench. You know, he had Cooper over the middle. I don't know if that's the right read at first. I have not asked that question, but it looked like there are times to rip them downfield, you know, deep in cuts, deep posts, whatever, that aren't being taken. but he took what was given him early in that drive, early in that quarter. He started well, and if you believe in PFF rankings, it was his best game, I believe, as a Brown.
All right, a lot of fans want to blame this, blame that, blame this, whatever. How long do you think it takes when you bring in a new offensive coordinator, you bring in a new offensive line coach, how long do you think it takes for this thing to really gel and find itself when Kevin's been calling the plays and Kevin is calling the plays? Like, are people jumping to conclusions too fast about the impact of the coaching on why they're 1-3?
I think that's low-hanging fruit, to be honest with you. I think the bigger concern is the health and the communication of and on the offensive line. That's just me. Everybody on the same page. I can't remember who asked it, but somebody asked Kevin on Monday, like, hey, everyone keeps saying everyone on the same page, or giving that answer. Is that just, you know, a cliche? And I think it is. The plenty of teams put in new offensive systems and hit the ground running. I think the offensive line issues trump everything, honestly.
Some teams have had issues and seem to be working a little bit better on that offensive line. But I can't do anything but completely agree with you. You know, when you
look, the Commanders have a new offensive system. Sorry to cut you off. The Saints have a new offensive system.
Right.
They've kind of come back down to earth, but their first two games, they scored 91 points.
Right. They were nuts.
Right. Yeah.
I get it. I've made the point 80% of your offensive line was out that last game. You know, after Posick went out, it's just been really, really rough. And I find it hard, Andrew, to judge anything on the offense without being able to say, yeah, but until that offensive line, because I think that's the situation, until they figure that out and somehow get a little bit of health and a little bit of consistency there, I think it's almost unfair to judge any other aspect of the offense.
I've used this line before, guys, the return to play versus return to performance,
yeah.
and something to keep in mind here, Nick Chubb, Nyheim Hines, as we hope to get those guys back. DeJuan Jones comes back, but his knee clearly isn't right. So you're not seeing the all-rookie team level of play and performance that you saw last year. Jed comes back, obviously doesn't make it through the first game. Posick's battling. You know, he got hurt against the Giants. He is fighting it, obviously. Wyatt Teller is out. Nick Harris is back at center. I thought he played reasonably well. I thought he played pretty well, actually. And then there's the miscommunication, obviously, on first down when you get inside the red zone. Deshaun is either trying to move Deontay for him, and clearly he's looking to the right. I don't know what that issue was, but there's a communication issue there, certainly, whether he wasn't lined up right, whether the noise was too much and they couldn't communicate whatever shift Deshaun wanted to make. I got to follow up on that, but then obviously he's looking to the right. The ball gets snapped. So he fell on it. Thankfully, they avoided it there. But there are all those little things adding up. And also, let's give credit to a $100 million player in Christian Wilkins. On the 4th-and-3 to end the game, you have a rookie playing right guard, and the $100 million defensive tackle won off the line. That's what $100 million defensive tackles are supposed to do. He won, and then the play went to the left, and Deshaun had to throw across his body and never got the ball off and didn't work.
Good point.
You know, Christian Wilkins made the play. Hats off to him. We spoke so much about Max Crosby. You know, they also got another guy that's pretty good in that line.
Nice. Hey, do you have a college game on Saturday or no?
I do not.
Oh, congratulations. Get a little rest, my man. Get a little rest.
I do not. Excited. So, actually, this one I'm excited for me as well because, you know, my folks, my family is in Washington, so it'll be good.
All right, outstanding. Well, good luck to you this weekend. You know we'll be locked in, and I'll talk to you on the pregame show before the game, too. So, thank you, Andrew. We appreciate you.
You got it, guys.
Thank you, Andrew.
He is Andrew Siciliano, Browns Radio Network, calling all the Browns games this year. And, of course, he was on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. It looks absolutely disgusting. So I was looking at it because we were looking. So,
gosh, anyway. I'm really sorry I've missed this one.
Well, this is what happens when you're not searching.
These are the heartbreaking news stories we're always working on.
Yes. Yeah. Although, actually, you do have a real news story.
I do. All right. So Evan Drellick, who's joined the show before, does a great job covering probably the most boring beat in all of baseball, which is Regional Sports Networks. and TV money and money in general is what Evan Drellick covers. And he's a great writer on it. He has this up there on the X. Okay. Breaking. Diamond says in court it plans to continue broadcasting one of the remaining teams it has with MLB. Now, for those of you who don't know, Diamond Sports Group is what you know as Bally Sports. They're the ones who have the Guardians and the Cavaliers. Okay.
And Guardians also Sinclair Broadcasting. Like, that's their big parent company. But that, for some reason, no one ever wants to say
and
that.
And poor Bally just bought naming rights and gets stuck with all the bad stuff.
So, like, don't hang the bad news on Bally.
On Bally. Right?
They just paid for the rights to all this misery.
They get paid to have the name on a product that's been rough lately.
Yeah.
Financially.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just so then that way we've got everything, all of our bases covered, and everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about. The other 11 teams with Diamond Sports Group will have to either negotiate a new deal with Diamond or go elsewhere because Diamond has decided that they are holding on to one of their broadcast rights, the Atlanta Braves, and that's it. Drellick goes on to further say MLB's lawyer in court says this is the first that Major League Baseball is hearing of this plan. Jim Bromley, the lawyer for Major League Baseball, says, quote, "We have no information about what is being done. We've had no opportunity to review. And now we're in front of the court and being asked to make our comments." MLB, he goes on to state that Major League Baseball was just sandbagged. Again, that is according to Major League Baseball lawyer Jim Bromley. Just to clean this up a little bit better, Diamond Sports Group, a.k.a. Bally, has carried 12 MLB teams in 2024. Three of those, Cleveland, Texas, and Minnesota, were on one-year deals as of last year. But the other nine teams, Anaheim, Atlanta, Cincinnati, Detroit, Kansas City, Miami, Milwaukee, St. Louis, and Tampa Bay, are all on their own. Diamond only wants the Atlanta Braves. That is just out of court right now.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see how this stuff plays out. I mean, you've seen along the way too. So there's been talk about maybe the Guardians moving to Amazon. Wasn't that one that some of these teams would move to Amazon?
So that was the thought, is that Amazon was going to step in and buy a chunk of Diamond Sports Group. And so far in bankruptcy court, that has not happened. Now, this is all still in litigation. This is all still being figured out. The Cleveland Cavaliers will be on Diamond/Bally's this
year.
Season.
Yeah.
Right. So for everybody out there going, oh my gosh, where am I going to watch Cavs games? You're still covered if you have Diamond Sports Group, a.k.a. Bally's.
And you could be covered for the Guardians next year, too. They might renegotiate a deal.
They could. I think it's interesting that you're watching these local networks that are getting into the game. Scripps is in the game now. Gray is in the game. Scripps owns Channel 5. Although, I mean, they had horrible news. They just laid off 200 more people on Scripps News. So I don't know what's going on over there. And then Gray Broadcasting seems to be getting into more local sports too. So Gray seems to be a little bit of a stronger candidate, you would think, moving down the road.
Well,
but
remember when all this started and you and I sat here and said, you know, you have over-the-air television stations that could really use content.
For sure.
And what's been happening? Over-the-air television stations have been picking up pro sports for content.
Trying to. A couple have. Like,
stay tuned.
I think it's just Scripps and Gray. I don't think anybody else is in there.
The Phoenix Suns are over the air, I believe, now.
Which I think is...
The Trailblazers just moved over the air TV.
Yeah. And if it's Scripps and Gray, good for them. And the Rock Entertainment stuff here in town, the Rock Sports Network.
They're up. I mean, that signal's up.
And they have all these auxiliary channels that are over the air. Stay tuned. History tends to repeat itself. So we'll see.
Yeah, I just wonder how they'll monetize that. That's the whole thing. Like, I think that's the hard part, is because, you know, you got to sell those commercials throughout the games. Who's going to do it? How are they going to get it? I thought it was interesting when, when SDO started, you know, it was like a three-way deal. Where
Guardians went into their own deal.
Right. Time Warner was doing all the sales. Channel 3 was doing, the broadcasting was coming out of Channel 3. It was just like this whole... Mm-hmm. It was a whole weird mix.
And it worked either, and they would have to tell you, either so well or so poorly that it went away. Now, you could say poorly because, oh, wait a minute, we're not making money. Or well because, oh, hey, we just sold it and look what we just did.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, they'd have to tell you what the bottom line was on that when STO went and merged with Fox. So that's, you know, that... look at it this way. We have a Major League Baseball team in town. You'll be able to watch their games on television someplace next year.
If, as long as you're in an area where you can get it through stream.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of folks that have been shut out. I television viewership for the Cavs and the Guardians did not help because of what's going on with this. There are a lot of people that haven't been able to watch it, and they've been turned away. But the good news for the Guardians was, you know, attendance at home was great this year. I mean, over 2 million people. Mm-hmm. You know, they put on a great product. Fans wanted to come out, especially during the weekends. I mean, it was great. I think that was one of the best storylines of the year. It might be more than the game itself is the way the fans embraced the team this year. So anyone that said, oh, they changed the name, I'm not coming back, they seem to have come back.
Well, all right, so I got two options for you.
Okay.
Give me the scale of 1 to 10 of the viability. Okay. I'm not going to have you do percentages or anything like that. Just give me a viability of this. Let's go at step one, which is we'll call this the Baskin and Phelps plan, right?
Okay. Oh, good.
Which Great. Is that a local station that Jeff is talking about, any one of them that is out there that is looking for airtime, because we all know that there are like only a few things in this world that people truly tune in live for.
Rockford Files. Oh, I'm sorry. That's not live.
I was just going to say that's no longer live. But there are things that are appointment television, right? It's basically like the Grammys, the Oscars, the presidential debates, and sports, right? I can't think of anything else. Maybe Dancing with the Stars falls in there, but that's it.
I'm just going to give you this real quick. What do all those things have in common?
They're live events.
Live events that you don't know what the outcome is going
exactly.
to be. And that's what people want to watch live.
Okay, so let's do the, again, scale of 1 to 10 on viability. You've always brought up STO and about how these teams were in the broadcasting business and decided, we're cool. We'll find somebody else to take care of that for us.
Right. Or they made more money for selling it off.
Exactly. Yeah. So let's start with that one. The Baskin and Phelps plan, an over-the-air station looking for people to tune in, takes over the Cleveland Guardians. Just 1 to 10, 10 being this is the most likely, 1 being the least likely.
Oh, you're asking if we want it or if it's likely?
Likely.
6.
Yeah, I would probably say it's like a 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And
it's an option which puts it middle of the pack.
But I do think that they need to, the Cavs and the Guardians need to be on the same page for that because that it works.
The Cavs just started their own network.
I know. That's why. Maybe mm-hmm. the Guardians might want to look into that. I mean, it would have been the other way around before when the Guardians had their, or when the Indians had their own network.
And the Cavs actually put some games on Channel 43 last year.
Yeah, so they've already opened the door for
have things in place to broadcast.
If you ask me, that's a 10 for the fans, man. If the fans can go out and pick up a $5 antenna, stick it on the back of their TV and get all these games for free, that is a win-win-win-win-win for fans and for the game.
Okay, we all know that part.
Okay.
That without question is the path of least resistance. That we know for sure is the path of least resistance, what we all want to happen. Which is that, hey, you just get it off the satellite and life is good.
No, antenna.
That's what I meant. Yeah, antenna. Like, I said satellite, meant antenna.
That's okay.
And if you turn it just right, you can still get Walter Cronkite. Those signals are bouncing around through the air.
All right.
There are days I just want to punch you.
Here's two.
Most days.
That is. Any day that ends
and
in day.
Give me the viability of two. Again, same scale, 1 to 10. Yeah. Most likely 10, least likely 1. Major League Baseball takes all of the teams that I laid out. And for those of you, once again, who want to know when it comes to those teams, it would be the Guardians, the Rangers, the Minnesota Twins, Anaheim, Atlanta, Cincinnati, Detroit, Kansas City, Miami, Milwaukee, St. Louis, and Tampa Bay. Puts them all together onto the MLB app and sells it to the fans and go, hey, you can watch all of your games this season and we'll call a one-team package, let's call it $60. Because I think the full MLB package you can get for like $110, $120, somewhere in that area.
Can I watch everybody?
You can watch
own team.
You can watch everybody but your own team right now, and I think it's like $100 or something like that. But anyway.
I think you're closer to that. They want to try to stretch every penny they can to get out of it. So I would say the Amazon MLS model.
Well, so that is So that's the Apple TV model, which is if you have Apple TV Plus, you get the MLS.
Right.
Right. So let's say Major League Baseball got a hold of their own, put it on their own app, and said, all right, we're going to go direct to you. $100, here you go.
Here's why teams don't want it. Teams don't want that because they set their own rate for what's going out. So that's like the YES Network. That's all money that just keeps going in the big circle for the Yankees.
Right.
So, and that's where extra money is able to be available. Like, how many times have you heard, oh, well, the the Guardians sold off STO, so they now have extra money in there that they can get this player or go do that player. I don't know that teams work on a line item budget the way maybe the Guardians might on that, because I mean we're like, it seems to be like, oh, look at that. They got a new billboard in left field. That means they can afford a new player. Like, I feel like we're the only team that lives and talks that way about a franchise. But the extra money you can make when you're in New York, you're Boston, you're L.A., that's Miami's interesting in that one, in that scenario, too. So, because Miami's a gigantic market, but as far as television is concerned, you know, they're not the Dolphins.
Dano.
A little bit of news before we head into break here. Browns have announced the following roster moves. They have signed linebacker Nathaniel Watson to the active roster from the practice squad, and they have designated running back Naheem Himes, guard Michael Dunn, and running back Nick Chubb to return to practice.
Kevin Stefanski's press conference coming up in just a few moments right here, 92.3 The Fan.